Well, good morning. We started a new series last week that I'm calling All In, because that's the attitude that God wants from us when we become followers of Jesus Christ. He wants us to become His disciples. And a disciple is a follower of Christ, but not just a follower, he's somebody who leaves everything else behind. They're all in. They put it all on the table, not just placing a small bet on Jesus, they're betting it all. You see, salvation cost you nothing. Being a disciple costs you everything. Salvation occurs in a moment. Being a disciple takes a lifetime. And we used a couple illustrations from the Bible last week. We talked about how following Jesus is like a marriage. It's easy to get married. Weddings are a lot of fun. But then it's 50 years of hard work, right? Making babies is easy. Raising them is a lot of hard work. Getting saved is easy. Being a disciple is a lot of hard work. And over the next few weeks, we're going to talk about several different areas where being a disciple can be hard. And I particularly find this one this week a little bit hard. Today we're talking about authority. When you were growing up, you got this idea sometime before you became a teenager that rebellion equals freedom. Now, you probably never said it like that, but from the time that you were maybe 12 or 13 years old, that's pretty much your operating mode, pretty much what made sense to you. The best way to get free is to rebel against authority and against the rules and ignore the rules, because as long as I'm keeping rules, then I'm not really free, right? Well, then we grow up. And that belief just doesn't magically disappear. It sort of morphs into a more sophisticated version of the same thing. As adults, we know that rebelling doesn't equal freedom, because we know the prisons are full of people who rebelled and then they lost their freedom. So we're too smart for that. But there's still this insidious bit of rebellion inside all of us that follows us into adulthood. And for adults, it generally sounds like this. If I disagree with a rule, I'll just ignore it or disregard it. Now, of course, we know that we can't just dismiss all authority, because sometimes there's bad consequences when we do that. And so instead, we take it like one rule at a time, one law at a time, one authority issue at a time. And if I don't like the rule, if I think that it is too extreme or it's redundant or irrelevant, or you know, maybe I think I've just grown past that, then I'll just disregard that rule. Let me give you an example. I live in Fairfield Township, and so every day I have to cross four bypass. And I usually cross at Hamilton Mason. And so, of course, about a year ago, they did all this construction, and they put in all these loop-de-loops all along four bypass. I know many of you are very familiar with that. And so now, in order for me to cross four bypass at Hamilton Mason, I have to go through three stoplights instead of one, and I have to drive about an extra quarter mile. Now, I will say that for those driving north and south on four bypass, that might be a good thing. You know, maybe you go faster. I don't know. They might like it, but I do not like it. In fact, I hate it. You know, I'm thinking, whoever thought this idea up is crazy, bad idea, you know. And okay, so I have some supporters here. Okay, now, here's what's worse about this whole thing, and that is that they put up these huge ugly signs that say, no right turn on red. So not even from the farthest right lane, so now I no longer have the right to turn right on red either. And, you know, that did it for me. I was so upset. And so I have to admit, I became a little bit rebellious. And for several weeks after they put up those signs and changed all this, I was rebellious. It's like I reverted to my teen years. And just about every time I got to that intersection, I turned right on red anyway. You know, and I just pretended like I didn't see that huge ugly sign, no right turn on red. And, you know, that I just sort of disregarded it and turned right on red. And every time I turned right on red, I got a little bit of satisfaction. It was like I was putting it to the man, you know, whoever it was that, you know, made that stupid rule that I don't like. Now, I will admit that before I turned right on red, I sort of scanned the intersection to see if there's any police cars there, right? Because I don't like bad consequences any more than you do. But for several weeks, I rebelled, and I turned right on red multiple times. I was a serial offender. I broke the law, I admit it. The good news is that I have since repented of my sin, turned from my wicked ways, and I'm now obeying the law at that intersection again, at least most of the time. Now, you may not be quite as rebellious as I am, but I'm willing to bet that everybody here has had at least some area, some situation where you've ignored some rules or laws. You know, maybe it's like that street near your home that has the 25 speed limit, and it should be at least 35. You know, what is the problem? You know, why'd they make it so low? Or maybe you're doing your taxes and you're thinking, that ought to be a deduction. I don't know why that isn't a deduction. You know, everybody could see that should be. I'm sure God agrees with me. It should be a deduction. You know, or maybe your problem with authority is borrowing things from work. You know, it's just a pen, or I'm just making a few personal copies. Or maybe for you, it's ignoring your parents' authority. I mean, there's many, many examples of where because we don't agree with something, we just ignore it. Now, despite my own admission of rebelliousness, I am just like you. I am all for authority. I think people should respond positively to authority and should submit to authority, especially when I'm the authority. You know, I love that verse in the Bible that says, children, obey your parents, because I'm a parent. And so that means I'm an authority. I like that, you know, and all of us husbands here, we love the verse in the Bible that says, you know, the husband's the head of the household, especially when we're in an argument with her and we're losing and so we don't know what to do, so we just come up with the one, husband's the head of the household, so I'm right, you know. That's better than losing the argument, right? Although you do pay for it for the next couple months. But you know, so we all think authority is great when it helps us, right? I like to be able to call the police, and I want them to support me in my time of need. Of course, I don't want them to chase me when I turn right on red when I shouldn't, but, you know, that'd be sort of dumb. But, you know, the point is that we like authority when it helps me. But somewhere along the way, back in the very beginning of the Garden of Eden, came the first rebellion and the first rejection of authority. And ever since that time, when it comes to authority and when it comes to rules, our natural response, as soon as we face authority, is to evaluate the correctness and the consequences. We look at the law or the rule, and the first thing we ask ourselves, do I think it's correct? In other words, in my opinion, is it a good rule? Do I agree with it? Is it fair to me? Is it right? Is it correct? And then the second thing I ask is, what are the consequences if I disobey? And so whether it's my parents telling me I have to be back at a certain time or my boss giving me an order, I evaluate the rule by, first, do I think it's correct? Is it right? Is it fair? Second, what are the consequences if I disobey? Maybe it's the authority of the government, or maybe it's the military, the educational system. Whenever you're in a situation where you have somebody telling you what to do, your first response to authority will be to evaluate the correctness and the consequences. And if we decide that it's not correct, in our opinion, and if the consequences are not very high, you know, there's no policeman at the intersection, I can turn right, no consequence, then we'll just disregard that rule, right? No, if I think that my company's policy about no internet surfing during work hours is just sort of dumb, it's a little antiquated. Besides, I know other people at work aren't following that, and so I can just disregard it as long as my boss isn't watching, and so there's no consequences, right? And if I ignore a rule, I don't feel guilty about it. I mean, what do you think? Is this the Dark Ages? You know, I don't feel guilty. I don't go to bed at night and confess my sin of ignoring that rule. It doesn't even make a mark on my conscience, right? Because I evaluated and I decided that it's just a stupid rule. You know, I'm sure God would second that opinion. If I can see how dumb it is, surely God can see that too. And so I'm sure both me and God are saying, dumb rule. Yeah, let's just ignore that one and nobody will know the difference. And the reason I think that is because ever since that first rebellion back in the Garden of Eden, we look at rules and authority and we do the same thing that Adam and Eve did. And we say, let's evaluate this. And let's evaluate it based on the correctness in my own eyes and the consequences. Now, not surprisingly, when we look at Scripture, we find a little bit different approach to authority. See, the question we want to ask is, what's the correctness and consequences? The question the Bible tells us to ask is, who stands behind that authority? Who stands behind that authority? And here's why we need to ask that question. If you have your Bible, turn to Romans chapter 13. The book of Romans is a letter that was written to who? Anybody know? Yeah, Christians in Rome. Rome, Romans, you know, we have some amazing Bible students here. And so it was written to a bunch of Italians. Now, there weren't many Christians in Rome because in the first century, Rome was not a very good place for Christians. Anybody know who was the emperor of Rome at the time that the book of Romans was written? Nero. Yeah, you guys really are smart. Okay, Nero was the emperor. And what was Nero famous for? Yeah, he burned Rome and he blamed it on the Christians. And then because many people didn't believe it actually was the Christians, he thought, well, I'll prove it. I'll just kill a whole bunch. And so he would burn Christians at the stake in his gardens to light the garden paths. He would feed Christians to the lions in the Colosseum. You know, Rome was not a happy place for Christians during the time of Nero. So keeping that in mind, here's what Paul wrote to the Christians in Rome at the time of Nero about authority. Romans 13, starting verse 1, everyone, that would be all of us, you and me, everyone must submit to governing authorities. Now, hold on, we better take time out right there. Doesn't this mean that we submit to governing authorities if we think they're correct? You know, if we evaluate it and we like the decisions they make, don't we get to evaluate the correctness and the consequences and then decide what to do? How can Paul just make this blanket statement that everyone must submit to governing authorities? I mean, come on, Paul, this is Rome, and Nero's in charge, and he's killing Christians. You know, you're telling us to submit to his rule? And Paul says, yes, that's exactly what I'm telling you. Let me tell you why you should submit to the governing authorities. It's because all authority is established by God. Paul continues in verse 1, for all authority comes from God, and those in positions of authority have been placed there by God. Now, we need to take a really big pause and let that sink in, because the implications of that statement are unbelievable. We're like, no way can that be true. Have you seen some of the terrible leaders and governments around this world, and you're saying that God placed them in authority? Listen, here's what the Bible teaches, that God always works through human authority. God always works through human authority, good human authority and bad human authority, believing human authority and unbelieving human authority, righteous human authority and unrighteous human authority. God always works through human authority. That's how God exercises his will on this earth. And so Paul says the question you should ask when facing authority is not what's the correctness and the consequences, but who stands behind that authority. And Paul's answer is that God stands behind that governing authority. And it's not just the government. If you're a soldier, God stands behind that military authority. If you're a student, God stands behind that educational authority. If you're a teen, God stands behind that parental authority. If you're an employee, God stands behind your boss's authority, because God exercises his will through human authorities that he has allowed and established, to which we go, wait, hold on, Ken. Is that saying that if I disobey a human authority, whether it's my parents or at school, or I do something my company's asked me not to do, or I don't respect the authority of the government, are you saying that when I disregard those rules of human authorities, that it's like I'm disregarding and rebelling against God? Are you saying that what I do at work is a spiritual issue? What I do at school is a spiritual issue? The way I show respect for governing authorities is a spiritual issue? The names I call my boss behind his back is a spiritual issue? Is that what you're saying? And Paul would say that's exactly what he's saying. In fact, he goes on and he makes it more clear. He says that rebelling against authority brings judgment from God. In verse 2, he continues, "So anyone who rebels against authority is rebelling against what God has instituted, and they will be punished." Punished? Whoa. You know, I'm so glad that I repented of turning right on red. I didn't know it was a spiritual issue. Now, this is hard for us to understand because we don't want to make any connection between human authority and God's authority. We don't want any connection, but God says there is a connection, and it's a direct connection. He says that person wouldn't be in authority over you unless God had put them there. And if you rebel against them, it's like you're rebelling against God. And the reason you have a hard time with their authority is because of what happened at the very first rebellion in the Garden of Eden. We've been rebelling ever since. So here's today's lesson in one sentence. Your attitude and response to human authorities is a reflection of your attitude and response to your Father in heaven. Your attitude and response to the authorities you can see is a reflection of the attitude and response toward the authority in heaven that you cannot see. And to think that somehow we can resist the authorities over us here on earth, but at the same time be under God's authority, no, can't do it. Not possible. You cannot subvert and resist the human authorities God has established and at the same time be under God's authority. Can't do it. Now, the problem is, as Christians, we really want to separate these two areas. We don't want human authority to have anything to do with spiritual authority because we want to be free to resist human authority when we want to. Paul goes on in verse 3, he says, "For the authorities do not strike fear in people who are doing right, but in those who are doing wrong. Would you like to live without fear of the authorities? Do what is right, and they will honor you. The authorities are God's servants sent for your good." Now let's stop a second because that is an incredible statement. The authorities are God's servants? This is saying that your boss, and yeah, I'm talking about the one who doesn't even believe in God, the one who's a jerk, you know, your boss is God's servant in your life sent for your good. Now, I know you're going, no, Ken, not my boss. No, you don't know my boss. Yes, your boss. Maybe he doesn't even believe in God, but that doesn't bother God. God is able to work through human authority, period. Ken, are you telling me that my parents are God's servants? My parents don't even believe in God. They've never darkened the door of a church in their life. You know, my dad cannot be God's servant, believe me. Yes, he is. If you're living at home under his authority, he is God's servant in your life. Remember, Paul's writing this to Christians in Rome, living under the power of Nero, and he's saying even Nero is God's servant. Because here's what Paul knew. God works through human authority. God works through good people and through bad people that he's placed in authority over you. And to rebel against those authorities under which God has placed you is the equivalent of rebelling against your Father in heaven. Now, you know what the flip side of this is that if you're a boss, then you are God's servant over somebody else. for the people who work for you. You go, you know, Ken, well, in our company, we just like make widgets, not a church or anything, you know, and they're not Christians. Doesn't matter. You're God's servant over those people. If you're a teacher or a principal, you are God's servant for those students. If you have authority over anyone, you're God's servant for those people, because God works through all human authority, whether they believe in God, whether they recognize God or not. And your attitude toward those human authorities is a reflection of your attitude toward your Father in heaven. It says the authorities are God's servants. Now let's look at the second half of that statement. Sent for your good. God put those authorities in place for your good. That means that obeying authority brings blessing from God. So there's a good side to this whole thing. When we honor and respect and obey authority, then God uses that to bring good into our lives. But when we disregard authority, he brings judgment. In fact, Paul keeps going and talks about punishment. But if you are doing wrong, of course you should be afraid, for they have the power to punish you. They are God's servants, sent for the very purpose of punishing those who do what is wrong. So you must submit to them, not only to avoid punishment, but also to keep a clear conscience. Now I want you to notice where he says, submit to them not only to avoid punishment. Now the problem is, that's usually our primary motivation right there. If I think that my job has a dumb rule, but I know that I might get fired if I break the rule, then I'll keep it so that I can avoid punishment. And that's the only reason that I submit to that authority. It's to stay out of trouble. It's not because there's any spiritual motivation, not because I want to set a good example, not because I want to honor God or honor the people that God has put over me. No, I just want to stay out of trouble. I don't want to get thrown into jail or pay a fine or get audited or, you know, get suspended from school or grounded by my parents, you know. And so I'll submit, I'll obey, but not because I respect that authority, but only because I would want to stay out of trouble. And Paul says that's not good enough for a disciple of Jesus. That's not good enough for somebody who wants to go all in. He says you need to take it to a higher level. He says you submit to authority not only to avoid punishment, but also to keep a clear conscience. And this is the most challenging thing of anything I'm going to say today. Is Paul says you need to keep a clear conscience in every area of life. Do you know how difficult that is? Let me ask you, do you have a clear conscience in every area of life right now? See, what he's really saying is that if you cheat the government, you're cheating God. If you cheat on a test of school, you're cheating God. If you cheat your boss by wasting time at work, you're cheating God. Anyone that you disrespect their authority, you're cheating God. And when you cheat God, you're not going to have a clear conscience before God. Let's take this even farther, as if we hadn't already. A husband and wife in marriage have a certain authority over each other because of their marriage relationship. They have rights over each other in that marriage. So this means that when you and your husband or you and your wife have agreed on something or you have an understanding about something in your family or in your marriage, and you have an opportunity to cheat on the rule, and you know that you will never get caught, he will never find out or she will never find out, all of a sudden, that doesn't matter. Because now you realize, I'm going to be cheating God, not just my husband or wife. And I need to keep a clear conscience before God. If I'm hiding anything from my spouse, then my conscience is not clear. Now, let me stop and say, I realize this is tough stuff. Paul's words about authority here affect just about every area of our lives and every relationship. This is not easy to deal with. This is only for disciples who are willing to go all in and lay it all on the table for Jesus Christ. I know that many of us in this room are not ready for this level of commitment today. But Paul says, hey, if you're going to be a disciple, then it's not just a matter of keeping the rules so you won't get caught. You need to submit to authority, even if you know you will never be caught, so that you can keep a clear conscience before God. You're accountable to God because he's the one who placed you under these authorities. Well, then Paul ends this section with an illustration about taxes and government authority. I don't know why he uses this example, except that maybe it's because it's one of the areas we get most upset about is when the government wants our money. But in verse 6 he says, pay your taxes too for these same reasons. For government workers need to be paid. They are serving God in what they do. Give to everyone what you owe them. Pay your taxes and government fees to those who collect them, and give respect and honor to those who are in authority. Now remember, Paul's talking to Christians in Rome. Nero's the boss, and Paul says, hey, Christians in Rome, here's why you pay taxes to Nero, who's trying to kill you. He says you pay taxes not because they're just or because the Romans are doing good things with the taxes. That, you know, none of that even matters. You pay taxes because the government was established by God. And if you cheat the government, you are cheating God. And then Paul ends this section by saying, and give respect and honor to those who are in authority. Some of you are thinking, are you saying that I need to give respect and honor to those leaders in our government that I disagree with everything they do? I'm not saying that. Paul said that. When Paul wrote this, Nero was in power killing Christians. He says you need to give respect and honor even to him. Now, Paul didn't say that they had to vote for Nero the next time he came up for election. But Paul did say that since he's the government leader, he is the authority established by God, you need to give honor and respect to those who are in authority. I have some relatives that live in another state, and a couple of them are what I would call like super hyper right-wing Christians. They dislike the current administration so much they've talked about their state seceding from the United States. I'm serious. And according to them, paying taxes is wrong, and everything about the government is wrong. It's evil. It's a constant rebellious attitude toward government authority. And here's what I think when I hear them talk. I think, you are such a horrible Christian example. Please, 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 please don't ever tell anybody you're a Christian. Now, I don't say that to them because I want to be able to talk to my relatives. But here's the thing, even if they were right on every issue, even if every argument they had is right all the way down the line, the taxes are bad, the government is evil, and the whole rest of it, it doesn't matter to a Christian. Because Romans 13:2 is very clear. All authority comes from God, and those in positions of authority have been placed there by God, so anyone who rebels against authority is rebelling against what God has instituted. It couldn't be more clear. Now, for some of us here, this whole area of authority is a major deal because you've been trying to get closer to God. You've been trying to establish that feeling of closeness, and you can't understand why it's so hard and why it doesn't seem like God is blessing your life. But at the same time, you're dissing all of the authorities in your life. And you think it's like two separate worlds, totally unconnected, but God is going, when you rebel against their authority, you're rebelling against my authority. Now the obvious question becomes, are you saying that I should never question authority? And I think it's actually the opposite. I think you should always question authority. But you can question authority and still stay under authority. You can say, I think these are bad laws. They're unfair. They're bad rules. I'm going to vote for somebody else next time. But because I want to honor my Father in heaven, I'm going to go along with it for now because for some reason God has allowed this law or rule to exist. So I'm going to question it. I'm going to complain to authorities about it. I'm going to write letters. I might even go march in the streets. But I will not rebel against or dishonor or respect the authority that God has put in my life. Because when I do, I'm rebelling against God. Now, the other obvious question we have to look at is, what if the authority is telling you to do something wrong? What if if a dad tells a son to go rob a bank or your boss tells you to lie, what do you do then? When an authority abuses their authority or goes outside the law, you simply appeal to the next authority up. but you stay under authority. You tell your dad or your boss, I can't rob a bank or I can't lie because I'm under the authority of our nation's laws and government. And so you appeal to the next authority. Now, once in a long time, at certain times in history, there's been situations where the law or government is so simple and so unjust that you might have to appeal to God. In the area of civil rights, Martin Luther King Jr. did this. In the Bible, we see David and Daniel and Jeremiah and Paul doing this, among others. And you don't rebel, but if the legal authority won't help, then you could appeal around the legal authority to God, and maybe God will intervene on your behalf. But you appeal to the higher authority, and you stay under authority. Now, this whole thing is difficult because many times in our lives, we find ourselves under an authority. Maybe it's a parent or boss or whoever, but we're under an authority that we really dislike. And they are unfair, they are unjust, we cannot see God's hand in it at all. You know, there's a worship song that we sometimes sing that goes, I am not skilled to understand what God has willed, what God has planned. And that is so true. None of us fully understand God's plan. Why this boss? You know, why are my parents like that? But we do know that God works through earthly authority. And so because we don't always understand what God is up to, we ought to be scared to death to rebel and get out from underneath that authority that God has established. Because if we do, we may accidentally get out from under God's will. Just think about it. If you had shown up on the day when Jesus was being crucified, what would you have thought? God, you've got to do something. You know, this is a wicked, ungodly government. They're about to crucify your son under false charges. God, you got to do something. And God would have said, I am doing something. Well, what are you doing? I don't see you doing anything. I'm saving the world. See, the people who saw Jesus being crucified didn't know what God was up to. The Roman soldiers didn't know what God was up to. But we have salvation today because God used a pagan, unbelieving government to do his will. But we can't see it at the time. We can look back on it and we say, oh, that's what you were doing, God. Now I understand. Now I see that you had a plan. We can understand it when we look back. But then we go to work tomorrow and once again we forget that God works through all human authority, whether good or bad authority, believing or unbelieving, God works through authority. And when we don't understand, and when the people over you are unfair and unjust or even evil, that doesn't bother God. Because he can work through any situation or any person to accomplish his will. So here's my question as we close. What are you going to do with this? How are you going to gain a clear conscience in the area where you've abused that authority or disregarded it? And how are you going to keep a clear conscience? How are you going to give honor and respect to the authority over you? Because this is a spiritual issue, whether it's at work or school or home, wherever, it's a spiritual issue. Your attitude and response to human authorities is a reflection of your attitude and your response to your Father in heaven. Let's stand for prayer, and I'd like the worship band to come up for closing song. Let's bow together. Heavenly Father, would you open our eyes to the areas in our lives where we've been hurting ourselves and hurting you by disregarding authority? Would you show each one of us what to do? Show us a first step for making things right in our life, getting back under the proper authority that you've established in our life so that we can honor you and so that we can be in the middle of your will for our lives and so that we can be a great example for others around us. Now, maybe this morning you're not even sure that you've got a relationship with God, much less knowing about authority. If that's the case, I want to just pray a simple prayer of salvation. You can pray along with me in your heart, and God will hear you. Just pray something like this. Dear God, I recognize that I need you. Jesus, I thank you for coming to earth, dying on the cross for me, and rising again to new life so that I can have new life in you. I want to get in on that new life today. And so I ask you to come into my life. Forgive my sins. Make me right with you. Make me a part of your family, starting this morning and lasting forever. Thank you. Amen.